It is Wednesday, June 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the White House takes partial credit for Kurd victories against the Islamic State.
I think the problem is that we're starting to see the expansion of a Kurdish north, and that is going to make a resolution of the Syrian problem all the more difficult.
Britain struggles to stem the flow of radicalized youth to the Islamic State, and the all-girl group Little Mix releases their third album. It's all ahead. The Obama administration is taking partial credit for recent gains by Kurdish forces in northern Syria against Islamic State fighters. On Tuesday, Kurdish-led forces claimed to have captured Ayin Issa, about 50 kilometers north of Raqqa, the capital of the self-declared IS caliphate. They say they captured a nearby military base late Monday following last week's ouster of IS fighters from the border town of Tal Abyad. The Kurds, known as YPG, or People's Protection Units, have been helped by U.S.-led coalition airstrikes. However, a U.S. defense spokesman says he cannot verify the latest Kurdish claim, but said Kurdish success is making it harder the IS group to keep up a steady flow of arms and recruits from Turkey. RAND Corporation Middle East analyst Ben Connable tells VOA's Victor Beatty, if the latest Kurdish claim is true, it is another significant victory against IS, although it could complicate Syria's political future.
I think the problem is that we're starting to see the expansion of a Kurdish north, and that is going to make a resolution of the Syrian problem all the more difficult, because if the Kurds do carve out their own space in northern Syria, there are going to be a considerable number of other Syrians who are not going to be happy with it.
Among all the reports I read, there is no indication of what their ultimate objective is. They're considered Sunni and moderate. What ultimately do you think is their goal?
Well, I think they are trying to probably carve out their own territory, which makes a lot of sense, and probably from a political standpoint, from a security standpoint, I think if anybody were in their shoes, they would probably be doing the same thing. The question is, how is that going to resolve whatever other issues are there, and are they doing any kind of ethnic cleansing that we've seen in northern Iraq and southern Iraq in Syria? I think there haven't been any significant reports of that I've seen. But that's something we need to watch out for.
What is their key to success, do you think?
Well, it's the small unit cohesion and fighting power that's generated by people who want to fight and win. I think they're motivated by the fact that they've lost their home territory. Their families were turned into displaced persons, and they believe they're fighting for an eventual Kurdish homeland. That kind of fighting power gives you great strength, and we see on the other end across the border in Iraq, the Iraqi army not doing well, really not having much to fight for. Not really believing in certainly the fight that's taking place in the Sunni areas.
They're being helped by U.S. coalition airstrikes. How is that being coordinated? How successful is that combination?
I don't know exactly how they're coordinating it. I'm sure that there's some kind of assistance that's being given there. Don't know how direct that is. But the U.S. is able to identify targets without ground assistance to a certain extent, and I think some portion of the airstrikes are certainly being done without any coordination at all. I think when the Kurds are fighting in tight urban terrain, so this is my estimation, that they are probably communicating the forward line of troops to the U.S. to ensure that their forces are not struck by coalition air power.
Given the apparent limited success that the Kurds are having on the ground in northern Syria, does this give some justification to the Obama administration's limited U.S. military involvement in this fight?
I think that's probably too early to tell. While we're seeing success in northern Syria, we're seeing setbacks in other parts of Syria and setbacks in Iraq. We're seeing the advance of the Nusra Front in Syria. We're seeing the advance of ISIL forces in other areas in Syria. We are seeing setbacks for the Syrian government at the, you know, which then it plays into the hands of some of the extremists there. And then, of course, ISIL recently seized Ramadi and has been pushing out into other parts of Anbar as well. Mosul still remains in the hands of ISIL. So we're a long way off from being able to say that any strategy is successful. I think probably there needs to be some kind of intensification of the air campaign if they want to be able to support an Iraqi army or a PMF thrust into Anbar province and then to Nineveh province.
If these apparent successes prove to be true, the Kurdish forces now stand about 50 kilometers north of Raqqa, which is considered the self-proclaimed IS capital in that region. Would that be their next objective?
I think that would be a bit of a reach, but it is possible. I think you'd have to see where the large concentrations of Kurdish people live. If there were large concentrations of Kurds in Raqqa, then that might be an objective. I don't think that is the case. I think they'll probably try to stay in areas where historically been significant number of Kurds amongst the population. And that is 50 miles in terms of the Syrian battlefront is a pretty long distance, particularly if it's in open terrain. And ISIL will probably fight very hard to keep Raqqa.
That's Ben Connable of the RAND Corporation. Connable says advances by the al-Qaeda-affiliated al-Nusra Front in northwestern Syria is less good news for both the Syrian people and the West. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky with a look at what's trending today. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, the top trending social media hashtag this morning is hashtag WikiLeaks Elysee. And WikiLeaks, of course, is the documents that have been leaked by Edward Snowden and others about U.S. spying and surveillance. And the Elysee Palace is the French presidential palace. And so the news this morning is that apparently, according to WikiLeaks, published in French newspapers, the U.S. has been spying on several French presidents over the past few years, allegedly from a quote-unquote spy nest on top of the U.S. embassy in Paris. The French president calling these allegations unacceptable, people taking to social media saying this is nothing new, the U.S. has been accused of doing this in Germany, so people are not happy about this in France and around the world. Another trending topic we have today is the hashtag take down the flag. Now, we talked about this yesterday, the Confederate flag after the South Carolina shooting in Charleston. This flag sits at the state capitol in Columbia. People are calling for it to be taken down. And now people have taken that a step further on social media. And they're actually posting pictures of people burning the flag, stepping on the flag. There's someone who's created the National Burn the Confederate Flag Day on Facebook, and already that has about 10,000 people that said this Friday they're going to participate in that and they're going to burn this flag. So it's interesting to watch that develop, not just this hashtag take down the flag, but for this event in Charleston to go from initially on social media people mourning the victims to looking for causes to blame, and now this is kind of the actionable item that people have seized on is this Confederate flag.
Yeah, and also some companies are now refusing to sell the flag.
Absolutely, and that's been a huge topic on social media as well. Walmart, Amazon, Sears have all said that they're not going to sell any Confederate flag merchandise. Interestingly, I think Amazon said that they had a 3,000% increase in purchases for Confederate flag merchandise after they made the announcement. So two sides to that story, obviously. And then finally today, big news out of Instagram. They've now announced that they're going to have a new search feature where you'll be able to look at pictures of events as they happen. And this is what people are saying. They're trying to compete with Facebook and Twitter, which is sources of news for people for social media. But Facebook and Twitter want people to stay on their sites to get news. And now apparently Instagram wants to do the same with their 70 million photos that are uploaded daily to Instagram.
All new ways of keeping in touch and finding out what's going on.
Absolutely. Well,
thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Celebrity news and facts with Action Reaction.
The Jackson family produced a pool of talent, as in Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson, Jermaine Jackson, and so on. But the Jacksons aren't the only family with more than one star hanging from their tree.
Hey, how'd you get that picture of me? I look amazing.
Comedy actress Melissa McCarthy, currently starring in the movie Spy.
Hello, doppelganger.
Happens to be related to TV host and former Playboy playmate Jenny McCarthy. They're first cousins. NBC's Al Roker is America's best known weatherman. So what's the forecast for his surprise relation? Very cool. It's musician and Hunger Games star Lenny Kravitz. Roker confirms their grandfathers were cousins. Legendary producer Quincy Jones has worked with some of pop music's best-known stars. Daughter Rashida Jones has also made quite the name for herself in hit TV shows like The Office and Parks and Recreation. For VOA's Action Reaction, I'm Lisa Vora.
The This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the group Little Mix releases a new album. The debate over the radicalization of young Muslims has been ignited in Britain following several high-profile cases of UK citizens traveling to fight for the Islamic State in Syria. It follows the revelation earlier this year that Jihadi John, the masked Islamic State fighter seen in many propaganda videos, is a British citizen. Henry Ridgewell reports on the heated debate over how to counter such extremism.
Please. Please come back home.
In front of banks of TV cameras last week, three men pleaded for their wives and children to come home. Earlier this month, the wives, all sisters, disappeared with their nine children on the way back from a pilgrimage to Saudi Arabia. It's believed they crossed from Turkey into Syria to join the Islamic State terror group. One of the husbands, Mohammed Shoaib, made an emotional appeal.
They're young kids, 7 and 5. And you know, I love you so much.
Three British schoolgirls from London joined Islamic State in February. Earlier this month, a 17-year-old boy from northern England blew himself up in a suicide attack in Iraq for Islamic State. Days later, a white British Muslim convert, Thomas Evans, was killed fighting for Al-Shabaab in Somalia. Speaking at a security conference in Slovakia last week, Prime Minister David Cameron said the Muslim community in Britain must do more to counter radical views.
There are people who hold some of these views, who don't go as far as advocating violence, but who do buy into some of these prejudices, giving the extreme Islamist narrative weight and telling fellow Muslims, you are part of this. This paves the way for young people to turn simmering prejudice into murderous intent.
The British Prime Minister is taking the wrong approach, argues radicalisation expert Joanna Cook of King's College London.
By viewing the Muslim community as one single unified unit like this, you really do not understand the diversity of the community. And by a sweeping broad analysis like this, you also risk alienating the law-abiding peaceful citizens that are going to be your biggest allies.
Instead, Cook says authorities should engage more deeply with Muslim communities.
Nobody wants to see their child go abroad or fall victim to radicalization or become radicalized. So this is very important for a lot of people in these communities, and it's very important to have strong, positive relations between security actors and communities.
The European Union's law enforcement agency, Europol, has set up a unit to take down social media accounts that promote the group. It's an important, albeit belated, step, says terror expert Abdel Bari Atwan, author of the book Islamic State, the Digital Caliphate.
They have, you know, thousands and thousands of accounts on the Twitter, Facebook, YouTube.
Atwan says Islamic State has exploited these accounts as a recruiting tool.
Social media is a good gift to the Islamic State. Why? It is free, it is accessible, and it is very, very influential. So if you compare the Islamic State with Osama bin Laden, for example, Osama bin Laden used to rely completely on Al Jazeera in order to broadcast his videotape, and they used to edit a lot of it.
Islamic State's latest gruesome propaganda video was released Tuesday, showing the elaborate execution of 12 alleged spies. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
Well, they met when they were competitors on Simon Cowell's The X Factor television show. Now they're about to release their third album. David Byrd and Larry London join us to tell us about the four girls in Little Mix.
You might have seen them on The X Factor. You might be familiar with some of their other works, but they've got a new song out called Black Magic. They're a girl group known as Little Mix, and Larry London joins us in the studio. Larry, Little Mix started out as not as a group, but as individuals competing on The X Factor.
You could call them the female One Direction. Same story for One Direction. Simon Cowell discovered a bunch of solo artists that didn't make the cut, put them into a group, and then bang, they became very successful. So that's the story behind Little Mix. They were once known as Rhythmix, but now they're Little Mix, and they're coming out with their third album.
Now, this song, Black Magic, I watched the video for this, and they kind of played up, you know, it's four nerdy girls in college, and then they discover this book of incantations or whatever. Suddenly, they become, like, super hot, sexy pop babes, you know, like, it's really kind of comical the way they transform, you know. But one thing I noticed in this, the music in this particular tune reminded me of a lot of pop songs. Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody, Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Want to Have Fun, even like Hold On by Wilson Phillips. Now I'm really going back in the
You're
day.
You're digging, Dave.
I'm digging deep. But, you know, it's just kind of like you're listening to the tune and all of a sudden these little things are going, wait a minute, my musical memory is pinging.
Right.
Is this formulaic, do you think? Or do you think it's just all pop songs kind of have several common elements?
It's good that you asked that because it was an intentional effort on their part to try and recapture the 80s sound. That's what they were going for, the 80s sound. And so they were very successful, obviously, with the artists and the songs that you just mentioned. That's right on target.
Well, now, an interesting thing I found out about this group, too, is that they actually wrote the song that Britney Spears and Iggy Azalea have on the charts, which is Pretty Girls.
Pretty Girls. Not doing too well.
But it's not doing too well, but they wrote it.
Yes, and they're very talented songwriters. In fact, they wrote this song that's featured on their new album that it leaked. The song leaked. It was supposed to come out in May. Or actually, it was supposed to come out in July,
right?
But it somehow leaked on the internet in May. So now the record label is stuck with a situation, so they're putting it out now.
Mm-hmm. So anything we can look for from the future of these girls? I mean, you mentioned One Direction. In One Direction, some of the guys are going in different directions.
Right, right.
But these girls seem to be in it for the long haul, right?
And there's an ironic twist to this, because Perry Edwards from the band is engaged to Zayn Malik from One Direction.
Who left One Direction.
And she was the villain, the rumor. Why he left was that she was jealous and he wasn't spending enough time with her. And so then he left and they're together and they're happy and they're getting married. But, you know, there was a connection there between those two artists beyond just being on The X Factor.
All right. Well, that's VOA's Larry London. You know, you can always contact Larry on Twitter. That's at @VOA_music. If you want to hit us up here on International Edition, that's at @VOA_IE. You can find Larry doing border crossings by going on to our website. That's www.voanews.com. That's where you'll have all kinds of interesting folks to talk to, hear from, hear their music from, and just check it out.
That is the music of Little Mix. And that is our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Sports fans, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sexual violence and conflict is an atrocity that stands in the way of peace, prosperity, and gender equality. In Iraq and Syria, ISIL is making life hell for women and girls. The situation is especially grim for members of minority populations. Thousands of girls and women were abducted by ISIL last summer. Many, including girls as young as 7 or 8, were repeatedly raped and forced to marry ISIL fighters. Others have been sold as slaves. The United States is providing both humanitarian aid and other kinds of assistance. But the international community needs to do more to protect and better serve women and girls affected by the conflict. For example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo, sexual violence has become a weapon that destroys lives, fuels conflict, and stands in the way of lasting peace. The U.S. is working to build a coherent approach to justice. Judges are holding open trials in local areas so witnesses can testify in their own communities. In turn, those communities can see firsthand that sexual violence will not go unpunished and that impunity will not be tolerated. Sexual violence and conflict continues to be a global problem that we need to address. In many headlines, women are portrayed as victims. And while there's no doubt that far too many women and girls are survivors of gender-based violence, it's not the whole story. Women are also incredible agents of change. They wield influence in their communities. They bring unique insights to decision-making tables. They increase the effectiveness of government. Gender-based violence, including sexual violence and conflict, holds women and girls back from participating fully in society. The repercussions negatively impact whole communities, halting development and leading to poorer educational, health, and economic outcomes. Tackling gender-based violence is crucial if we hope to unleash women's and girls' full potential and promote stability and economic growth.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.